stress very strongly that those were not very well-documented cases. The evidence that was presented did not have anything to do with the efficacy of frequency and really had nothing to do with the original devices that Wright had built.
And tell that to one of those patients who were terminally ill who were walking around, that it didn't work. Isn't that the bottom line, really?
That is the bottom line.
Isn't that what we should be interested in as a society? Isn't that what a doctor should be interested in? Isn't that what the owner of a pharmaceutical company should be interested in, that a way has come down the line that will get rid of disease? And if it doesn't happen to be what his company is doing, then go make that device.
Well, let's challenge your listeners. You have a big audience. Let's see if we can pull some pharmaceutical. How about a Pepsi challenge?
Yeah.
How about a...
Well, the listeners are already beginning to line up. Let me give the numbers, if I may, to get in to ask about this. I do have a question now. We have the microscope. We have the data. Do we have the frequencies? Can it be employed again? Or are there laws or things that say we can't use it now on somebody who is terminally ill or ill?
Well, the frequencies are around, and yes, we could duplicate it. I'm sure we'd have to be under clinical studies again.
Well, certainly it needs to be done.
And bringing it out, definitely. That would be the way it would be tested. Seeing where it would come out today would be very interesting, where the openness is to something new, because still, in fact, it is something quite new. We're getting into devices now that are being used in doctor's offices that are built around frequency, so there's a more of an awareness right now that frequency does, in fact, enhance health care and have a positive effect on the body. But it would be very interesting.
Well, if I'm understanding, Laverne, what you're saying that right now the microscope is available, the frequencies are available, the way to generate the frequencies are available, the documentation of the past shows that they produce 100% cure rates so far. Where's UCLA? Where's USC? Where are these people? Where are the great medical facilities of this great community that we live here in Los Angeles? Why aren't they using it? Why aren't they even interested? Why aren't they talking to you?
Where does the research money come from? Who is giving the research grants?
I don't know whether Dow Chemical would invest in this or not, but maybe somebody who is interested in mankind would.
Well, now you're getting much closer to the key, and that is that the area of physics has been kept out of medicine for far too long a period. The whole body, everything that we are, everything that exists is frequency. They determine death by your heartbeat and your brain waves, which are both electrical, yet all of the treatments, all of the therapies tend to be, again, on the chemical aspect. We would like to comment, too, that when you are immersed in this particular subject and you read the studies and you read the letters that went back and forth, Laverne and I would spend evenings where we would be heartsick because you look that's something that exists with the possibility of use. Now, there has to be money that is available so this can be researched properly, because even though it was very successful in the past, it is a part of the mechanism of our society that something be revalidated, but there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever, again, these are all laws of physics, that this would prove, once again, very, very effective. But we feel, in our particular case, that there has to be sufficient revenues so good studies can be conducted. And that really is the bottom line right now.
Surely there's somebody up there that wants to cure cancer. Surely there's somebody that wants to get rid of leukemia, multiple sclerosis, and all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And here seems to be an avenue that, oh, it's non-chemical and non-cutting. How very, very dastardly that may sound to some. But if you have that disease, it sounds pretty good to you. Let me give you the telephone numbers if you want to get in on this conversation, and this may be a good one tonight. And Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation, and before we go to our callers, and they are jammed onto the line tonight, I'll tell you that, they want to talk to you, Steve. Why don't you tell us what Royal Rife himself said?
We have a direct quote, which I thought would be apropos now. Right? explain that the lethal frequencies for the various organisms, as in sound waves, exist in the very organisms themselves. And he felt the disease organisms could be disintegrated the exact way as a vase or glass can be broken when the appropriate sound wave, the resonant frequency, is played. When the ray is directed upon them, the organisms are seen to behave very curiously. Some kinds do literally disintegrate, others writhe as if in agony, and finally gather together in a deathly, unmoving cluster. These, again, are Rife's comments. Brief exposure to the tuned frequencies, Rife commented, brings the fatal reactions. After the organisms have been bombarded, the laboratory reports show they are clinically dead. In fact, after Rife would use his mortal oscillatory rate on cancer, he would take a part of that tumor and put it back into the test rats, and none of them would ever develop cancer, even though he, up to that, would inject 500 consecutive rats with the cancer. Each one would develop cancer. Then when he used the frequency, no rats after that time, no matter how many times they were injected with that particular tumor substance that had been treated, would ever get cancer.
And that's, by the way, a part of that marvelous film. You can see that entire process, how he meticulously went through that testing. Okay, let's go to the folks. Hello, Kay.
Yes, good evening to you, all of you. I was really, really interested in this. Now, has it ever been, I think you mentioned something that it has been on some patients, is a terminally ill, is that correct?
Yes, yes, terminally ill patients, and they all made it.
Well, the reason I'm so, you know, interested, my mom is lying very terminally ill from cancer right now in a different state in the hospital. And she has had chemotherapy. What is that machine that they put them in, an iron lung effect? You know what I'm talking about? Is that chemotherapy?
That's cobalt radiation or some other form of radiation.
Yeah, yeah, she's been in them things, and she said it's just scary as can be. Machines are so scary for her.
Okay, I want you to understand that we're talking about a science that was developed 50 years ago and then squashed.
Yes.
And it isn't available now. You have to live with the chemotherapy and with the radiation.
Yeah, the end result, what I'm talking about. Now, my brother's kept my mom all these years. Now, they want him to come to the hospital and see if she's had any money. Her Medicare has run out, and he's going to have a lien on the house now.
You have a question, Kay, for...
Yeah, that's what I would like to ask them. Isn't there any private funds that anybody is setting up for them? I mean, setting up in any private... research centers, you know, around the world. Hasn't anybody done anything, you know, to help them?
To help all of us.
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right. See?
At this particular time, no. We, up to this point, have made sure that we've collected all of the data, secured the microscope, have the different films, the frequencies, we have the daily work logs. And I think now really is the time when something can be done with proper funding. Up till this time and before having the actual microscope, which was a whole story in itself, how we even came upon this microscope.
Thank goodness you got it.
Really nothing could be done. So it's a matter, I think, now of people being aware of it, people making a decision that if we are truly going to make that all-out war on cancer that the then president proclaimed back in the 70s, and billions of dollars have been spent, then why can't money start being put into the effectiveness of frequencies in fighting diseases? Now, again, to answer your question, there has not been a lot of money spent here, but anybody who does research around the world will see that in Russia and in Germany and other countries, they are fighting these diseases with frequency, with magnetism and electricity.
And quite successfully.
Very successfully.
Well, that should be enough for the people to, you know, ask what's going on.
It's different in the United States, honey, and the reason is money.
Yes.
One thing I would suggest for you and all the listeners, I would suggest that the various charities that you give money to, that you might start asking them what research projects they have underway for the money that you have donated.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to point out, too, Kay, that the World Research Foundation is not a medical research foundation. It is a repository of some of the most incredible levels of information and data,
mm-hmm.
which is their function.
That would be interesting. Do you have tours or anything they can go out there and see the microscope?
The microscope is not on display. It is in a very secure place at this particular time.
You have to have a White House pass.
Right.
Well, I guess you have the film, so that would show.
Yes. Right.
We have the film, and we also have pictures, and we also have literature that's available for a person who's interested.
Yes.
Okay, Kay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good to have you aboard. And let's see, we have Jim on the line. Jim?
Hello, people.
Yes.
Hello.
This is a really exciting show. I practice Buddhism, the effect of which can be understood from the point of view of physics, and I've been really interested in curing disease through physics for some 10 years. I've preached to several doctors in my city here, and I didn't get too much of anywhere, but I'm so happy that this kind of work has already been done. And I want to ask, do you have plans or description of how to build these frequency generators, and how can we get in touch with your foundation? And I also think we should all write telegrams or send public opinion telegrams to the Surgeon General and the health, education, and welfare people.
There you go.
I'd like to see you get in touch with some people at the City of Hope in Los Angeles. And I'm a promotion person myself, and I believe I've known about this principle myself just through my own independent realization for some time, and I'm really behind you, and I hope this is really, really, really on the level, because I think that we should have some kind of revolution here and right away.
Well, to answer your question, if it was not on the level, then that would be discrediting people like Rosenau of the Mayo Clinic and Kendall of Northwestern and Milbank Johnson of the local establishment. And
what about plans to build the machines?
Well, there are definitely plans. Again, it's like anything else. You have to have the revenues to accurately conduct experimentation and tests. You want to have the best people possible who
well,
are doing
it. We the people
it.
Have our hands on the purse strings of the country, and if I could have saved my good friend who was a retiree from the Federal Aviation Administration, I mean, he hired the PATCO operators and Reagan fired him. If I could have saved him as I rushed and died of cancer, all I could do was chant, and I can't chant as heavy as a machine might be able to generate a sound wave and do the dirty work or the good work, you know?
Yeah, I think it would probably do a little bit more than chanting, but don't put the chanting down.
No, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. In any case, I really want to get behind you now. How can we get in touch?
I'll give you the address of the foundation.
Okay, I got a pen.
All right. The World Research Foundation, 15300 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 405, Sherman Oaks, California, 91403. And our phone number, area code 818-907-LIVE, L-I-V-E.
That's beautiful. I work about 20 blocks from you.
Well, We might also suggest to the listeners that there was an article describing the entire Rife microscope and the illumination, the chemical staining by light frequencies that appeared in the Smithsonian Institute and the Franklin Institute. We have a reprint of those particular articles as well as a foreword by Dr. Royal Lee, and the title of the article is "What Has Become of the Rife Microscope."
All right, thank you. All right, there's our little song. Thank you for your interest, Jim, and your enthusiasm. Get out there and go to work for us, would you?
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a break for the news at 10 o'clock. Find out what's going on the outside, but I think what's going on these next 2 hours will be quite fascinating. And you're invited to YouTube, and was the father of broadcasting and electronics as we know it in our industry. He developed a way to electronically kill those viruses. And then there was a way developed to kill the efforts of Dr. Rife so that something else could go on. And one of those things that went on was death from catastrophic diseases. It's an interesting story, and I hope you're enjoying it tonight. David, you're on.
Yes, Bill. Thank you for one of the most magnificent shows of all time on your wonderful program.
Thank you.
And my best regards to Steve and Laverne, whom I know. I'd like to ask Steve and Laverne if you could tell us a little bit more about the nature of that electromagnetic vibration that will destroy the virus. Is it in the visible light area? And does it have any effect on, or are there certain frequencies that would have an effect on normal, healthy tissue?
No, actually, the frequencies were not in the light area. The frequencies really were over a broad spectrum in regards to the various, not only the various diseases, but also the various states of the bacteria and viruses as they live through their normal life cycle. The interesting factor, I guess the best way of explaining it, is if you think of the singer who sings and breaks a glass, she'll break
yes.
just one type of glass, but not every single glass that exists. That's
sure.
the one that resonates. So
yeah, that's specific.
Right. So it did, absolutely was not harming the healthy tissue. Only, in fact, when they found the correct frequency, it really disintegrated the walls, basically the cell walls.
It's almost as if the cells were crystalline or of a crystal substance, whereas the regular healthy cells are not.
Yes, and is that an electromagnetic vibration? Do you have a magnetic field that is used, or can you tell us much about that, the frequency device?
Well, the original device, again, and this is what really the discussion is, you're talking the rudimentary beginnings of even frequency devices that were built. Now, the original one was not... did not have a magnetic field set up, but that's not to say that something was not taking place at that particular time. The frequency device that they used was a gargantuan type device when you compare it today with the frequency devices that they make. But basically, it was used for one millisecond, and that 1 millisecond of exposure was enough to devitalize or disintegrate every one of those organisms in the body.
Amazing.
It wasn't even a long treatment. But once again, if you remember, as we said, the concept of the singer who breaks the glass.
Right.
And again, it was only affecting those particular organisms.
Well, were there experiments run in which they would, let's say, go through that whole energy band, let's say, for a microsecond, and in a way wipe out everything on everybody, on anybody, so that there wouldn't really be any pathogenic organism left
in the
body.
Just clean out everything, in other words, right?
Yes, clean out the whole system.
Clean house. Why not?
Well, I can tell you that there was one letter that was written between the doctors, and the letter said, one day while experimenting in the laboratory, we hit a frequency that shattered glass of a particular shape. It took the mossy substance off the leather chair. In fact, as they wrote to one another, it said that every disease organisms that were in the test animals in the entire laboratory were all killed instantly with one frequency. Now, that was the good news. The bad news is they did not write what the frequency was in the letter to each other. They did not have it in any place whatsoever. And in fact, the story ended that they said that they pinched each other to see if they were still alive. All the test animals survived. And the only hint we have is that the particular form of glass, one particular shape, was broken in the laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
That could be duplicated.
Absolutely.
Yes. And... you have all of the information necessary to rebuild that frequency device, or do you have a frequency device too? Right now,
the information exists.
We're talking hot seat here.
we're saying that there are frequency devices, and we'll just let you know that there are researchers all over the world who are using these particular principles and are very, very close to coming out with the same information. Now, they aren't working on the microscope, but they are working with frequencies, and they're demonstrating that, again, the laws of physics pertain even in illness. But the important factor here is that It can be duplicated. You've got much better equipment today than Reif ever dreamed about, and even Lee DeForest ever dreamed about in his day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Steve, would the you've probably heard of the work of Dr. Foll, electroacupuncture diagnostic and plugging in Germany, and lots of people using the acupuncture media as a way of using sometimes laser lights to
yes.
mm-hmm. act. Is this in any way similar to putting energy frequencies through the body?
Yes, there's no question about it. You're working with the electromagnetic spectrum, and as we mentioned, it's going to burst at the seams. We're very close all over the world with Nordenstam's work, shrinking cancer tumors with electricity, with the Russians' work. As soon as that becomes more prevalently known, that they are shrinking cancer tumors up to 90% by using magnetic fields, that there are certain magnetic fields that cancer absolutely cannot survive in because you reverse the polarity of the cell structure, you will find that the Volt techniques, the electroacupuncture that's being used, all are in that electromagnetic spectrum, and you can electrocute. I'm going to use it very simplistic. You can electrocute any living organism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Okay, David.
For your financing, are you going to maybe make an appeal to all of us? We could send donations in to you for this specific project.
I wish.
We did set up a World Research Fund, and that fund was just set up to handle this type of specific need, where we actually do current tests on things that have not been used or not currently being used now, to revalidate that particular thing. And so anyone who would like to donate to that to the World Research Fund, it would be just designated for that type of natural research.
And will you be having a newsletter, perhaps, for those of us who donate?
Oh, yes. In fact, we will be getting in a little bit later into the show of what the World Research Foundation actually is, because, again, we're a repository for a lot of data. But just before the break, I want to mention again that we have a booklet that is available that describes the Reif microscope, the principles, the various diseases. And for people who want to send in a donation of $2 or more to the foundation, we'd be very happy to send out this booklet, which is a reprint of the 1944 article that was published in the Smithsonian Institute of the U.S. government, in their exact words in the Smithsonian, saying that they witnessed, under the Reif microscope, disease organisms such as tuberculosis, cancer, sarcoma, strep, typhoid, leprosy, all succumbing when certain lethal frequencies were applied. That is from the Smithsonian Institute's own editors.
Thank you very much, Steve. That's magnificent.
Thank you.
Thank
all right,
you.
David.
Bye-bye, Bill.
Good to have you aboard.
Bye.
We're 15 minutes past 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. With me, Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. We're talking about Royal Reif, his microscope, his work. Nobody cared. Many died.
Hello,
Craig.
Hello to you, Bill. Nice to hear you.
Good to hear you.
Well, I'm glad the previous caller covered some of the questions I wanted to bring up. But I still have a lot left. First of all,
I know you're talking a long way away from Milpitas or someplace, so speak up, Craig. We're having a little bit. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. He was asking if you have specifications and plans, et cetera, for the frequency generators. What about for the microscope?
The
duplicate of that be built?
The microscope, there was never any patent taken on it, and the specifications were really not written down anywhere. Reif at the time did not write them down. There were some general descriptions that were given in this booklet, which we will be sending out to those inquirers, but the specifics, because he used very, very unique principles. He used prisms and crystals in this microscope. It was very, very unique, and it does not exist in print anywhere.
And didn't he put anything down in form of notes, or were they just lost?
A lot of work was lost. A lot of records were lost. But the actual microscope, again, is still in existence. The basic structure is known. The concept of using counter-rotating Risley prisms where you are heterodyning light, that is well described in this little booklet. So there's quite a lot that can be done. We're just choosing to reconstruct this in an ethical way so that it is presented properly that it is revalidated, because this is something that is so valuable that it should be done correctly and accurately and represented.
Yes, it certainly sounds like it. What strikes me is that that microscope, being such an advance over previously achieved optics, you would think somebody would have submitted that for Nobel Prize consideration.
There was a, in fact, we would like to interject that an individual who was Rife's assistant the last 15 years of Rife's life, John Crane, who is very, very responsible for the preservation of all these materials, had related to us that Rife's name was submitted to the Nobel people, and he was turned down basically because he did not have a doctorate.
I mean, after all, we've got to get first things first.
And
Jake,
I think if you do a little bit more checking, you'll find that that particular body has a tendency to only award to those who do have the credentials as far as the degrees. However, one should ask in the course of history how many remarkable achievements have come from those who were not necessarily degreed from college.
I don't think Madame Curie had her doctorship whenever she...
Doctor, was he a medical doctor then?
No, actually, that is an interesting facet of the story. Everybody, the other doctors, lovingly referred to him as Dr. Rife, and it caught on. However, he was not actually a doctor, even a medical doctor. But what he was an incredible microscopist, and he was a tremendous engineer. He did have a great knowledge of medicine over his years. And again, he had the most credible medical authorities of the day working with him step by step.
Just out of curiosity, what was his educational background?
Very, very little is known about it, actually. Very, very little is known about it. He made quantum leaps in his research and investigation that were almost remarkable. But then again, that's how some of the great achievements come. When he had a feeling that frequencies were a very inherent part of viruses and bacteria, he went on a crusade to visibly demonstrate, to factually demonstrate that this was the principle, and off he went and started building this microscope. In fact, interestingly enough, we do know of his past. He worked over with the Zeiss people, who in Germany are its incredible reputation, and when he came back, he felt that the Zeiss people didn't even really have it all together in regards to microscopes, and he said he's just going to build his own, which he did.
Was he ever written up at the time when he was doing these things in Who's Who in Science or whatever, any of those kinds of publications where they compile all the people currently active in the field?
You're going to have to speak up again, Craig. You're fading on us.
Do you want me to repeat the whole thing?
No, I think...
No, we got the story. We got it there, but you were fading.
As far as we know, we haven't found him in Who's Who or that type of directory. We have several newspaper articles on him, but no, as far as we know, in that type of directory or Who's Who, we have not found it as yet.
And was it his assistant who you just mentioned who had taken care of the microscope for all these years, or how was it rediscovered?
John Crane, yes, had actually taken care of it, had kept it under safekeeping for a while and kept everything fairly quiet and protection until the time was right again. And he preserved Rife's library as much as was possible, the books and a lot of the paperwork that Rife used. And he also preserved the microscope and a lot of the other equipment that was utilized at the time.
That's good he did that. Let me ask you one question on the treatment itself. When you're irradiating someone, or just to use a different word, bathing somebody with light of a given frequency, I would think you'd have a certain problem in that it only penetrates to a certain distance. Now, how would it actually kill off all the disease organisms within a body?
Well, they were not using light frequencies. They were using electromagnetic frequencies in a different part of the spectrum, so it had nothing to do with a topical application. It was not regular light. It was actually frequencies that were generated and went through the body at a rapid speed This is how the electromagnetics work in the cellular structure, which has been proven all over the world. So it had nothing to do with the topical application.
So are you talking about microwave frequencies or?
More like
range.
Like a radio wave would go through you also, that type of technique.
Yeah, that would be microwave.
Right.
Huh, I see. Pardon me. One question kind of stuck out in my mind, even though I find what you've outlined to be quite plausible, and I've considered these types of ideas myself. You refer to, quote, the cancer virus, and we do know that there are viruses that are associated with cancer causation, but when you say the cancer virus, isn't that a little bit misleading term there?
Well, if you're taking something out of context, what we mentioned was that during the life cycle of the viruses, they take many forms. And I had already stated previously that it took different frequencies to devitalize even the cancer virus at its different states. So,
well, that's what I mean. When you in taking that sentence in that context,
right.
When you say the cancer virus,
we're saying what we're saying is cancer largely is caused by a virus. Now, the form of the virus can be many different forms, but what he showed in his work, it was definitely a virus.
And he definitely got rid of it.
Got rid of it.
Get rid of the cancer.
That's really what we're saying.
And that's the bottom line.
I mean, that's not to say I understand exactly what your question is, but we're not stating that it is one specific. It is a
family of viruses.
It's a family of viruses. In fact, again, in this booklet that we have, they showed that there were 10 general families of bacteria and viruses that changed based on the environment existing within an organism. They would actually mutate